So I guess, you know, that theme, just keep rowing. For me, the leader's job is to have the team be convinced that they're convinced that mm-hmm. you're still in it.
Hi, and welcome to the Leadership Now series with Nick Vujicic and Christine Grimm, Aria Consulting, 23 years of executive coaching, and I'm humbled that she is my coach. I could not lead without the sound coaching from Christine. I'm so glad, Chris, that we get to coach everyone watching. Tell us what we're going to be experiencing here on this series.
Yeah, we're going to coach you around leadership, around real challenges, how to navigate the challenges that you have right now, and how to feel good about it.
I'm so excited, Chris. You're going to be sharing with us also your pool of CEOs that can bring in and chime in some principles from their experience as well. Thank you for joining us here on the Leadership Now series. Here's today's episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Leadership Now series here with Nick Vujicic and Christine Grimm. Chris, I am so excited that you have introduced me, and now we're introducing to the world one of your dear friends that you're in touch with a lot. And in the leadership world, you said we gotta have Rob Crozier on the show. Rob, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
Thank you so much, Chris. I'm so excited. I'm gonna quickly read an introduction for everyone out there. I want you to know, I was gonna say your socks are gonna be blown off. My socks are already blown off. Just getting to know Rob a little bit has been so inspiring. 28 years experience in the health care products and services industry, serial entrepreneur with multiple successful product and service company exits, experience spanning the entire business enterprise from sales, marketing, operations, product innovation, and most recently, mergers and acquisitions, sitting on various boards as an investor in several startup companies as well. Rob serves currently as the CEO and president of Helion Inc., a leader in clinical staffing and educational solutions. Wow, Rob, welcome again. And thank you so much for joining us here this week. I'm so, so excited. We have an awesome episode. We had a prep call, and man, I'm like, me and Chris, we were like, Rob, wait. Don't share all of that. We're going to share that here. So guys, get ready, get your cup of coffee, and gather around the camera if you're with someone else there. Rob, welcome again. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you with all of this going on? How are you doing?
Doing well. I've been buttoned up now for better part of 16 weeks, and family's healthy.
Awesome. You know, Chris and I, we've had some other guests on the show, but in our prep call, you've actually said something that I've never heard anyone else say, and I actually want to open it up there, actually. The word pivot, everyone has been using it, and I would love to just, you know, get into that word first, because everyone's like saying, how do we go into that? And Chris, I'd love for you to share, you know, what's the word on the street right now, currently in the situation in leadership with all the other leaders. Chris, actually, I might start with you, but I really wanted to open up because that really perked my ears up, Rob, when you said, I don't like the word pivot.
Yeah, I'll just add to that and then I will pass the ball to you, Rob. I do think that what we're seeing in our executive coaching practice and our leadership team engagement is that we went through, as most people might know, but let me just describe, depending on whenever someone watches this, so that it's relevant. We went through the beginning of the COVID-19 situation. Most people personally and professionally thought, okay, this is temporary. Tried to figure out what was going on. We're dealing with how it impacted them as a human, maybe fear about being sick, maybe not understanding why and how things were closing down, really trying to track with, if you will, and trying to process very quickly what it meant for their own work, if they work, their family, if their kids were now homeschooling. I think we went through about 4 weeks of what I call that adjustment, right? People trying to get like, what is happening? this feels wonky. What is happening? But again, believing it was temporary. Then we moved into what I have experienced as people thinking, oh, wait, I don't know what temporary means anymore. Like, I thought temporary was weeks. Now I'm realizing it's months. There are people who maybe even started to think, wait, maybe this is years. And what does that mean? And now we've overlaid with social unrest. We've overlaid with the reopening process, thinking about, you know, how that's happening differently in different states, counties, and cities, thinking about what that actually means to us in a new way. And I want to go with what you're saying, Nick. I agree. I do want to talk about this because I think that it was looked at as positive, the businesses that pivoted, which what we meant in those times. And so the two of you might recall, I was the person from the get-go who was saying reboot. Take this moment in time to fix everything that was broken before this, so that when you come out the other side, you're not saying, oh, I wish I would have taken advantage of a crisis and done these things. Now that message doesn't even ring with people. But again, a lot of people were praising others for pivoting, which meant alcohol manufacturers, perfume manufacturers that started making hand sanitizer. Right, so they did something that they felt like they could fairly easily do that would be in service to the process. I think now what is happening is something very, very different, right? There's some fatigue. They're still thinking about how long this lasts, and now this has different levels and layers. So I'm going to stop there. I agree with you, Nick, that I'd love to hear Rob talk a little bit about his version of maybe how we move away from pivot to something else.
Well, thanks. You know, I've been a little backstory. You know, I think any entrepreneur or leader, we have confronted change. We've confronted market challenges, whether, you know, it's a reimbursement change, regulatory change. There is change, disruption, challenge that we're confronted by, I think, incessantly. This is obviously far more dramatic, once in my lifetime. And I've always struggled with the term pivot, having played basketball, you know, throughout my life for fun. You know, I understand what a pivot is, your pivot foot. Pivot is a turn. But it, for me, has never really implied momentum. And it seemed as though it was a turn from what I was meant to be doing. And so, after a lot of reflection, and Chris knows this, I'm in my head a lot, you know, the term that I'm now resonating with is the term tack. And tack is a sailing term, for those of you who don't sail. And when you sail into the wind, you sail on as close a line as you can to directly to the wind. And unless your destination is exactly in that straight line, you have to tack or turn. What ends up happening when you're sailing into the wind is you kind of get to where you're going by a series of zigzags. And those zigzags allow you to kind of continually course correct instead of being able to just stay in that one straight line. So for me, the advantage of the word tack is that it suggests that it's on purpose, that it's inevitable, and that it's forward momentum. You're not moving away from what you're meant to be doing. So, for me, it doesn't have the same sense of lack of forward momentum that pivot does to me. And so it just feels better, and it's where I am right now.
I love that. I don't play basketball, and I don't, I love sailboat. That I actually proposed to my wife on a sailboat in Santa Barbara, and I love being on the water. And we'll get into also really the title of this episode actually is Keep Rowing, and we'll get to that in a second, and sharing with people that passion and all your knowledge in that. But the amazing direct lessons in leadership in that, for me, it was like, okay, in my personal life with this last 4 or 5 months, it's been like, yes, there was momentum that I was hoping to then harness that energy and pivot into a new direction. And now hearing this from Chris, you know, reminding me that Chris, you did say reboot from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And I said pivot from the beginning. And now when we're zigzagging on attack, I mean, this is in a way of tactical doing the tack, the zigzag. This absolutely makes more sense. It's actually more real for me personally, because we have no momentum mm-hmm. in the speaking industry right now. Right now, my whole family's packing up and we're moving state. Sorry if you hear my kids in the background or taping up of the boxes and stuff. A lot of boxes of my shoes. I'm just joking. But like, I was just telling my wife yesterday, it's like, you know, imagine packing up your home, going to a place you've never been, in a place where there are no people that you recognize or know. At least we know kind of what, you know, Texas looks like. We have family there, and we're going to a home familiar to us over there. It almost feels like in the business sense right now that this is an absolute reboot with a free canvas. And I'm so thankful to say that it's almost like a point that I can say I can rebuild my next 15 years based on now what's most important to me. And most important to me is being true to myself, because leaders will not change. And I love that, you know, when what's the term, Rob, the person that's the head of the rowboat? It starts with C, you said?
A coxswain.
A coxswain. I've learned so much about rowing with you. It's been awesome. But, you know, it's not like us leaders woke up and say, well, you know, when you're a true leader and you understand servant leadership and heart, it's not like we woke up and said, well, we, you know, this is too hard, or, you know, crossing our arms and saying, well, we just don't know. If it is years, is it going to be in a way that, you know, that there will be a no new norm, like this is mm-hmm. the norm now that we're all getting used to. For me in my own life, it's so displacing. Mm-hmm. And zigzagging mm-hmm. is exactly what we're doing. But when you're a leader and a coxswain for the whole team, how do you keep on waking up and saying, I don't know what I don't mm-hmm. know, but keep going, keep rowing, mm-hmm. Keep mm-hmm. zigzagging. You know, some of those zigzags, I tell you, man, I watch YouTube now with my boys. We watch fishing. And when you're watching fishing, you get some amazing videos about crazy rogue waves coming. When a rogue wave comes, and you know, when a boat's on a wrong angle, that thing could capsize and flip at the wrong angle. So how do we as leaders, as the coxswain, if you will, the CEOs, keep on rowing in a straight line? How do you make sure that your angling of the boat when the waves are coming, that you're just doing your best and not, I'm sure like in this, you could overthink the science of this as well, but those parallels of sailing, zigzagging, tack, the coxswain with the rowing team and the precision of that. I would love to dive into that. That was just phenomenal to learn from you, Rob, the parallels of leadership and how you've used it in your leadership.
Hmm. Well, obviously in sailing, zigzagging or tacking is essential. In rowing, it is not. You want to go in as straight a line as you can. And maybe just a little backstory. When I was at a state college many, many years ago, I was walking around campus and these guys came up to me and said, hey, you look like a rower. I didn't even know what that meant. You know, that's how they recruited. And still today, because it's not a big scholarship sport and very few high school kids have ever been exposed to it. So I showed up at a practice. They took a liking to me. And so I began to learn what looks like from shore is so easy and effortless. How very, very difficult it is in the boat. And it's helped me a great deal in my life, the metaphor and the learning. And I think, you know, to the conversation we had a couple of days ago, just to share a little bit of that with folks who've never been in a rowing shell, which is what they call a large boat with eight rowers. There's eight of you. You're all facing backwards, so you can't see where you're going. There's a coxswain who drives the boat and drives the men or women that are in the boat. And they're very much the leader. And most of them, because it's all about weight, are little men or women who have big energy, big attitudes. So the reality is that what you learn is no matter how strong or how fast or how much endurance you have, it doesn't matter as an individual. The boat only goes fast when everyone is in harmony. And, you know, we talked a little bit the other day about this idea. For me, what's been on my heart is separateness. And in a rowing shell, there can be no separateness. The reality is that the boat is actually, people don't realize it, but the boat is a very tight, it's a very narrow V shape. And it wants to tip over and potentially capsize. Imagine a canoe with a hull that's shaped like a V. There are no outriggers. There's nothing that holds it upright. It is absolutely the balance of the people in the boat. Now, that's hard to do when you're just sitting in the water. Everybody's kind of like, you know, like a tightrope walker. But when you get up to speed in a rowing boat, it becomes infinitely more difficult because you're exerting all this power and each person's hands have to be perfectly the same height. Remembering you can't see everybody else's hands in the boat. And, you know, Chris, to your point, I'll take a beat. You know, what a rowing coach's job is, remember, they're in a boat. They're not in your boat, right? They're on the outside of the organization looking in. And the rowing coach's job is to make fine micro adjustments in individuals mm-hmm. so that the team is faster. And I will say just before I let that go that, you know, rowing is a meritocracy. You know, my experience was there were 80 guys on the men's team that wanted to be in that top boat that got to travel and go to the races. And only the best people were in that boat. Mm-hmm. And at every race, before you went to the race, we did what are called seat races, which means you time the boat down a course and then just you get out of your seat and someone else gets in. And is the boat faster with you out of it and someone else in it? And so the rowing coach's job was to understand how to make a fast boat to make a fast team. And that wasn't always the strongest person or the strongest two people. It was how the team functioned together.
There's a lot in there that's so good. Look, it's important what you're saying, and I wanna ground us for a moment and then come back into this because you've just said so much, Rob, that is so good. And one of the things that stuck with me in here when you clarified the difference between rowing and sailing, and coming off of what you were saying too, Nick, I wrote down, I'm like, oh, I feel and I hear in my conversations every day, all day, that we are in unfamiliar territory. So even my leaders who believe their mission is still true and that what they do as a business, so I'm just going to bring this into the business context, small companies, big companies, doesn't seem to matter, is that if my leader is still committed to the mission of the business, to the purpose of the business, to making it happen now in this new context, there is still some new territory, right? There is still now this thing, which is the methods I used in the past aren't working anymore. My people are different. The marketplace is different. Our customers are overwhelmed. So how I used to lead before isn't necessarily working. So I have to find new ways. That feels unfamiliar, right? That's a very personal thing for most leaders, as both of you know, right? You have your style. You have the cadence in which you're used to communicating. You know your people. And so you manage them in specific ways. Those practices right now for many people are not working, right? So that's one thing that has now become unfamiliar. So whether I'm rowing in a straight line or whether I'm trying to sail a tack, like for a lot of people, they're going, wait, where are we going? Or should we still even be going in this direction? I think so. And I'm finding with the leaders who are resolute in their commitment to leadership, to their, like I said, their mission, their purpose, and what they're doing, that seems a little bit easier, but not so easy still. And then I have my leaders who, way back, I was saying reboot because some of them were already having problems. So they knew this was going to impact them. And those were the people where I was going, if you were having problems before this, you better rethink everything so that you can come out of this with something. And so that group of people, I think we need to speak to too. So I just want to ground us there, because I think that whoever is watching this, I think we're going to have a mix, right? And it's important, I think, that we help everyone with what we're saying if we can. So I don't know how the two of you want to speak to that, but I do think we need to just recognize and not be tone deaf to the fact that for a lot of leaders, like, they're just in completely unfamiliar territory.
Well, Chris,
I love that. Rob, I love what Chris, I love what you were saying, and I'd love Rob to expand in how you have used that word commitment and committed to your leaders, like as a leadership to your team. That's where the drive comes, doesn't it? From the coxswain to everyone in the boat, we got to be committed to understanding that, look, when we're zigzagging, we may not be exactly where, you know, you think we should be heading, but we're zigzagging, and trust the captain on the ship. And then the coxswain, because all you can see is the person in front of you. And I love that example that you also taught us, that, you know, for a second, the precision of each oar, that when you're pulling back, and it, if it clips the water, it's almost like so dangerous. But number one is the foundation of being committed to the race, that we are a team, and we can't have harmony without that commitment and that drive from everyone. How did you do that? How did you reiterate commitment from your team in uncharted territory like this?
Yeah, you know, early on, and we had sort of a front row seat to at least the dimension of a pandemic, because we work in the post-acute space, and we saw what happened in Kirkland, Washington. And so we were really early to be anxious, and we were really early to move through to a place of acceptance, and then sort of be in action to begin to tack. And the reality is that I believed then, and I believe now, you know, Churchill many years ago talked about this idea when, you know, what are people going to say about us? Will they say this was our finest hour? And that for me was a rallying cry inside the organizations, that we can have this be a moment of fear, anxiety, loss, desperation. There are going to be changes, but who are we? Who is our brand? Who is our organization going to be? Will people see this as our finest hour? And what does that mean to each individual in the organization? And how do we rally around that? And that meant that we had to give space to the idea that we had to allow people to take care of their families. We had to allow for all the employees to transparently understand where we were and what that meant. And back to this idea of kind of results are honesty and being honest and transparent with where we are and what that means to the organization, but also allowing both the organization and our people to be able to help the community, whether that's helping our customers, whether that's helping their broader community, faith-based. And so, again, terrific need all around us. And will this be our finest hour? And that became sort of this through line that allowed people to elevate above themselves and try to see what we could do to help people around us. So that's kind of how we approached it. And I think it's still today how we're trying to live our lives as a corporate brand. I personally believe that people's brands are at stake, personal brands, corporate brands, with how they respond and not react to this situation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think that is for sure showing up, not just with the pandemic, but of course, like this new layer of social unrest that we have, and very complicated issues that I know we don't have time to really go into today. And frankly, we're not qualified, but it's real, right? And it is contextual for all the leaders that we're talking about. So I think something you just said, you know, really rings true, Rob, is that first and foremost, your natural inclination in the beginning was to sit down with your teams and have that grounding conversation, you know, that set the tone that, you know, is this going to be our finest hour or not, right? Like, who are we actually going to be in this? And, you know, I would highlight for our listeners that anybody who's been following this series, or even if it's your first time with us, welcome. And I would say, you know, a thread that continues to run through is this, you know, need for leaders to recommit yourself first. You know, be clear with yourself first, like, okay, wait, I'm a leader, like, it's time. Like, this is real leadership time, right? Like, everything that happened before and all of our moments of success, now what I'm seeing is, like, you know, it's not, it's a cliche, but it's really not, it's real life. Like, when the going gets tough, the tough gets going. Like, we're here, the tough is here. It's not getting seemingly easier for people. So leaders need to kind of, you know, ask yourself, are you committed? And what are you committed to? And then ask that of your people in a very clear way. And we can talk about what happens when you don't get the answer you want. But first, I think you actually need to get clear yourself. And Nick, I don't know how you feel about that, but I've seen you
totally.
Do it.
Totally. No, absolutely. I love it. The purpose and mission of who am I, my family, my commitment to my family, the purpose and mission of me being a public speaker to now do it virtually while I'm doing the TAC. You know, like, it's a whole new world for me. But it wasn't difficult to know what I really love. It's really interesting. Like, you know, sometimes there's so much clutter in your life. Like, I used to every 3 months do a whiteboard exercise for me, myself, and I to know what am I committing to and recommitting to for the next quarter. What gets in second tier, third tier, fourth tier, fourth. And for me, it's like, it's not like I have the capacity either to be the usual multitasker Tasmanian devil, you know, and taking on less. Like, oh my gosh. Like, I feel like it took something like this for me to understand what a balance is, because it's in a sense, I was feeling like 2018 was absolutely awesome because of 2017 and because of 2016 and 2015 in retrospect, to be able to have a perspective from previous years, I felt like I was slowing down. I felt like I had my priorities thinned out to keep in the main thing. Now, when everything stops, it's so easy to let go of half of the good things that I thought were great that are not so important. And recommitting to the most important things. Who's on the lifeboat with me? What are we gonna do? Where's the line for me between generosity and wisdom as a CEO? How long can we go with holes in the boat? That's the question that many CEOs are wondering. Our nonprofit is doing fantastic, but the motivational speaking side out of that. It's become a drought overnight. It's like as soon as the rain stopped in April, we had snow on the mountains in California, and by May it's all brown. And it was just as quick. It felt just a couple of weeks of like, wow, my life will obviously never be the same again. And I don't know what the new looks like, but to have a positive perspective, to know that you've done everything that you can, that you are grounded, that you're not swayed one way or another. You're not affected by what you're hearing and the emotions. I feel like, you know, I also feel like as a leader, we've had to navigate the uncharted territory now in waters with the complexity of the layers of social unrest and all the business economic impact that I don't think we've even scratched the surface of, in my opinion, until really the spring of next year. That's my opinion. I feel like that there's so much there, but in the meantime, to keep the precision, alignment, unity of a team, how does a leader communicate well? But I think we've needed to, as leaders, listen very precisely and have our team feel like we're listening to everyone like never before. I mean, I know that I'd make a great coxswain because I don't take up much room and I don't need leg room. And I just want to make you, I love that visual of that. Kind of like leave your bags behind. It's almost like the Concorde, before that stopped production, you weren't allowed basically to take on many bags. It was like, you jump on that plane and you go at lightning speed. It's almost like downgrading from a Concorde to a King Air for me. It's like, hey, let's get the safest plane and we'll cruise as slowly and steady as we can. And it's almost like, wow, it's been such a stunning thing for me that it took me to get over the shock factor. I love that that story, Rob, in our prep call of what happens when a rower drops the oar.
Oh, right.
And it flings it back. Like that in itself could be termed in so many different ways, but I love even just the shock factor and the unknown and not knowing how long the unknown is going to be unknown and knowing that no one else knows more than me. But we're in this together. We're going to row, keep rowing. Can you share that story, Rob? Sure. That to me was just phenomenal.
Well, obviously a couple of things that I think that folks need to understand again is that in a rowing boat, not a rowboat, but in a rowing boat, all of the rowers are facing backwards. The only one who can see forward is the coxswain. They sit in the back of the boat and look forward, and because of how the stroke works, all the rowers are facing backwards. I think that's an important metaphor because in so many ways that is our job as leaders, is to be able to see over and in front of the boat. And you have to have, as a rower, you have to have amazing trust that you're moving a boat 20 miles an hour, the person in the back is steering, and they could run you right into a bridge. And you're hanging on the edge of unconsciousness in terms of your effort and energy. And I'll also, I guess, say another thing that I think is relevant here is that, you know, there are oars out of both sides of the boat, but in the bigger boats, one rower holds one oar. And so you've got four people on the port side, four people rowing on the starboard side. And if not, they're not rowing together, the boat will turn. So the coxswain's job is to ensure that not only, because again, in rowing, unlike sailing, you want to get the fastest distance between the start of the race and 2,000 meters later is a straight line. And the coxswain has a tiny little rudder at the back of the boat. They can only make subtle adjustments aside from saying to one rower or another to lighten up, add pressure. So the boat goes straight because everyone is pulling equally. And if the coxswain has to do too much correction, it slows the boat down because that little rudder, as it begins to turn, creates drag on the boat's speed. So either the boat begins to turn and you're out of the race, or the boat is still going straight but exceptionally slow because the leader's spending all of their time trying to course correct the team. So I think those are all really relevant for me when I think about leadership and kind of a team working well together. The example I shared a couple of days ago, in a really big race, we were racing against Harvard, and I was in this little state college, and it was kind of our best season the school ever had. In a boat full of seven other guys that had worked really hard, you know, Chris, to your point, we'd been coached, we did all the preparation to get there on race day, and like so many businesses, you've got competitors in the water, right, who are just as hungry potentially. Maybe they've out-prepared you, outworked you. You hope they haven't, but halfway into the race at 1,000 meters, the person directly in front of me caught a crab, which is when the oar gets stuck underwater. And because you're going so fast, the oar wants to go along the side of the boat. You're at the end of a fulcrum, and either you have to lay down and let it go over and try to get it back. But because of the way that you're moving in a boat, it's basically catastrophic to your race because you have to basically come to a stop where all the other boats have it. In this case, he chose to try to not let it go over him. And the result of that was it caught him under his rib cage and launched him out of the boat, ripped his foot stretchers right out of the bottom of the boat with this huge crash. And I looked down, I thought maybe we were sinking. I thought I had torn a hole out of the center of the boat. And I'd never experienced that. I'd never seen it in a video. I was new to the sport. And all of our inclinations were to stop. And the coxswain has this microphone that we can all hear because we're so far away. The boat's 60 feet long. And all she yelled was, just keep rowing. We're still in this. And we'd never practiced the seven people. Now you've got four people on one side, three on the other, right? So now you're inherently off balance. So she's got to manage the fact that the four people have to take a little off their stroke. You got the advantage that you're a little lighter because he's gone and he was safe. He got picked up by the race boat behind us. But you know, her confidence in us, mm-hmm. her commitment to the mission, we would have all just stopped. I can tell you that was my plan. How do you finish a race with seven people? Is that even legal? Like, I didn't know what the rules were. You know, are we all going to sink right here? There's no way with seven of us we can compete with eight. And Harvard was right there. And so, I mean, this was a real race. We finished second. And I'll tell you that today I played lots of sports, had lots of competitions. It's still, I think, personally, my most, the proudest academic achievement ever to finish second with seven people. The only way I can describe it to people is imagine coming in second in a NASCAR race with a flat tire for the last four laps. Like wow. it is that big of a disadvantage to have one less person.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
So I guess, you know, that theme, just keep rowing for me, right? There's a lot of this moment, right, of inertia. You can stop rowing. You can see the drama. And by the way, that holds true non-pandemic, non-other things, mm-hmm. when you lose a team member, when something happens. But I think that the leader's job is to have the team be convinced that they're convinced that mm-hmm. you're still in it. Mm-hmm. And because we couldn't see what was, you know, behind, you know, what was happening in front of the boat behind us, we had to trust her. And obviously what ended up happening was all of us worked harder. That's what I see happening right now around me with people, leaders mm-hmm. I work with, companies that I'm on boards of. People are working a little harder because there's maybe you feel like there's only seven people in the boat. And that's okay right now because the mission, the win, the victory, what it means mm-hmm. is worth it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think
love that.
It's so good, right, Nick? Yeah, I mean, it really, really is good. And there's so many applications to it. Something that you just said, I think I just want to make sure we repeat it because people need to really hear this, right? You said that by the commitment to the mission, that it gives the leader confidence. And so the people have confidence. Right. And, yep. I will tell you, I'm just going to get super transparent and human here. I really feel like one of the things that my team is trying to figure out is how do we coach people, you know, out of this, what feels like oftentimes a crisis of confidence. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of that going on. You know, Nick, you admittedly, one of our first episodes talked about your own crisis of confidence in the beginning of this process. And, you know, I think that this is leadership now, right? And being not only resilient as a leader, and we can talk about what that means, but, you know, what you're saying is super important, Rob. I think a lot of businesses right now, if you were to have the visibility we have talking to people in their teams, they all feel like they're getting people ripped out of the boat right now.
Yeah.
Right, like something disruptive is happening everywhere. And I would say to the listeners, you know, even businesses that have seemingly benefited from this situation, you know, there are a lot of industries, delivery of food, for instance, you know, obviously, you know, Amazon, their business is responding and is growing, but they're still having issues. Right? Everybody's been disrupted, whether it has impacted in a negative way or a positive way. And for some, by the way, they're getting both at the same time, which is also extreme and feels disruptive and like, whoa, wait, what are we going to do? What? Like you're saying. And, you know, because most organizations actually don't function like a rowing team. Even if they were close to it before, you know, some of it is just feeling like, well, where do I find that confidence, I guess is the point.
Well, a couple of things about teams, and obviously many, many years ago, you helped think about team dynamics, team communication, yeah. team planning, teams, right? I learned a lot in terms of how to bend my natural style way back then. But I think if you continue a bit further with the metaphor, you know, the interesting thing about, a team, if you're in the circumstance of being in a boat, you all cross the finish line together. That's an important thing. There are very few other sports you might win together, mm-hmm. but in this case, you finish as one. And having everyone in the boat, in your boat, understand that you're going to finish together, I think is really important right now. And back to that idea of not being separate, but being together. I also think that in the boat, you can only see the person in front of you. In my case, the time the guy got ripped out, but you can't see anybody else. So you have to follow the person in front of you. And this idea that I've worked with through my entire life, which is around cascading leadership, particularly in a large organization, you have a great core team, but the people below them can only follow the person in front of them. And so the reality is that if the person in front of me is off by a stroke, I'm off by a little more than a stroke. The person behind me is off by more than a stroke, and we're now no longer harmonious. We're not operating in synchronicity. And so that's when things really get fast. I know that's tough right now, but I think it's an important time to remember that we have to have everyone see themselves as a leader because of how they affect the person who is watching them, and so sometimes it's the second and third person in command who are the most meaningful because they have the most people, the largest part of the organization under them. And so I think for me, the job of a great leader is to make sure that the people who are following and watching you see you model behavior and then that you encourage them and have them understand the importance of them doing the same thing for the person behind them in the boat.
It's awesome. The other word that you said as well was trust. And all of this really goes back to also like what do we need to feed our minds as leaders and our spirit and our soul to be able to trust ourselves and our instincts and our decisions that then we can come across with confidence, that then that's reciprocated from the team. I know I would not have been able to reboot if it wasn't for the support of my wife. I have four children. I know each of us have children. I've got a very young kids though, and seven and under. And it's been weird for me that daddy's home, but I can't talk to them for 12 hours. And I actually pulled 12-hour days for weeks on end. And I just realized it was on Friday that just went by. It was the first time that me and my wife could spend some time together outside of the house without the kids with us. And we got to talk and we got to just hang. How important it is to be self-aware what you need as a person in the business, outside the business, whether it's spiritual meditation, but the emotional mental tank, you can only run on empty for so long. You can only rev on the RPM in red for so long. One of my favorite leadership movies that I love watching, I can't wait to watch. I'm going to watch it every single year since I saw it with my wife. And I get emotional really quick with movies. I don't know what it is, but I cry way more than my wife. I mean, she's half Japanese, so, strong. But I'm a Serbian too, and I don't show much emotion at all. I had to sit in my cinema chair, Ford versus Ferrari, after I watched that, and who are you? It's almost like, and who are you? What do you want? And you see a leader driven, and he's so close to getting exactly what he's always dreamt of, and then he backs off to then finish as one with the other two cars. Sorry to spoil it if you haven't watched it. You gotta You gotta watch it. I don't care how young or older in experience you are in leadership. It's one of my favorite movies. And for these social and emotional and mental, you see how that driver's wife is just so grounding to him. And spouses and family, I think, like how does a leader know when they're really on empty, on edge? What could we do on a practical step? Chris, I would hate your job. I'm going to say it again. I would hate your job in this moment right now. And how do you say, okay, leave the bags at the door. I'm coming into the home now to be with my family. Rob, you mentioned on the prep call, you had a transparent discussion with your family saying, hey guys, this is what it's going to take for me to lead, you know, my team through this. I need your support through this. I'd love to bring in the balance of how does a leader themselves as a coxswain, you know, like be not leading on empty, wise, making good decisions, apart from just what we talked about being true to the mission and purpose.
I can give you a little bit of my perspective. You know, I find a great deal of recharge in my faith. I know not everyone has necessarily that to lean on in the same way. But I think for me, it sort of influences this idea of my role as a servant or a servant leader. And I think that's, you hear that, it's de rigueur right now, lots of books and other things written on it. And seems like every other LinkedIn page talks about servant leadership, but that's a very old concept. but what I would say is that we are servant leaders in our families. We're servant leaders in our community, and we're servant leaders in our business. And, that balance of sort of, life, faith, health, family, is really important to me. And I will tell you that I've always encouraged and seen it as an essential to the teams that I've built, especially the leaders around me, that I support, maybe even require, they have that same kind of balance. I said a long time ago, I enjoy being around people who are happy and fulfilled. And if you're not fulfilled, you're probably not somebody I would want to hang out with. And that's a really hard thing if you're going to build a leadership group, people you don't want to hang out with. And I haven't met many people who are happy that aren't fulfilled. I haven't met many people who are happy who don't have a balanced life. So I think it's important to encourage our teams. And I don't mean, oh, we're all going on a corporate retreat. One more weekend, you're not with your family. I mean, no. Let me learn about your family and what's important to you and understand that you have the space to be a balanced person. I think you're going to see a huge evolution because, all the companies right now, we're going to stay remote forever. Our productivity is up 22%. Yeah, because those same workers that used to have some balance that came into the office at 8 after they hung out with their kids and they had coffee and they came home at 3 are now starting at 6 a.m. and are taking calls until midnight. And there's going to have to be a reckoning with that. Mm-hmm. We can't, those of us who are willing to do it, will be given the opportunity to do it, to work ourselves to death. And so I am encouraging
It's happening.
So again, I start from the very start with conversations I have with people who are important to me. Tell me about the other things away from here. And I'm not going to say it's part of a their recruiting or of a job interview, but I like to see on someone's resume that they've got hobbies. They like to fish. They like to camp. They enjoy their family. That shows me that person understands that there's more than just a CV and, let me show you how I work 24 hours a day for my last employer. I know where that goes. And so I try to be, again, a reflection of that balance. But there are times, right, when the person gets jerked out of the boat where the other 7 have to row a little harder. And I will tell you that I took up that mantle. I understand the responsibility. my team didn't necessarily take up that mantle. I know that I'm going to have to work a little harder right now, and I'm going to have to apologize in advance to my family and people close to me that this is what it's going to take, because my best talents, my best perspective matter, not necessarily just to the business, but to other people, how I can help. Right? The fireman doesn't say, hey guys, my shift's over. Sorry, the freaking building's going to burn down. They stay until it's out. And right now I feel like, to a certain extent, some of us who can add value, who need to be there, that's just the role we're playing.
Yeah, I think that's true. I just want to support that, Rob. I want to give people some resources. That there are some great resources out there to help people. You know, you're talking about more than resilience. So many things resonated. And I just want to, for anybody who doesn't know, or you're kind of coming in, and I'm an executive coach. I've been doing this 23 years. I've had the privilege of working with both of these amazing gentlemen. You know, part of us all coming together is, you know, talking about real life right now in application to, you know, anyone, so that everybody takes something away. And there's an important thing here, right? We're on a planet of humans. Everything you were just saying, Rob, I'm like, we got to talk about this, right? Like, leadership isn't, you know, for some people, I believe they've had the ability in their career to lead, specifically in big corporate environments, I find. And it isn't until moments like now where they have to actually face the fact that they're leading a bunch of humans. You know, because when things are going great and everybody's productive, like you're saying, and everybody's working and everybody's doing their thing and everybody goes home at night and comes to the office, and, you know, there seems to be like this separation before there was a separation, right? And most people showed up at work, by the way, with some kind of mask on. Whatever was happening at home, it wasn't appropriate or politically correct or allowed to kind of bring that to work. Now, those masks are off. We've got a blur like between everybody on Zoom calls. We got dogs barking and kids talking and all those things. And you know, something we were talking about earlier that I want to bring into this is, first of all, you know, what has happened for a lot of people is one of the reasons it's feeling unsteady and unfamiliar is because their identity was and is wrapped up in work. And when that changes to the level that it has been disrupted and is continually feeling unfamiliar, a lot of their identity is also wrapped up in that. And something that you said that we need to talk about is, if you don't believe in something bigger than you, and I'm not saying you have to believe in any one thing. I'm not being religious here. I wouldn't do that. I would say to every person the same way I would to the two of you and any person sitting in front of me, which right now is a lot of people, is, if you only believe in you and you've been completely reliant on yourself up until now, you're probably feeling a little unsteady. And that might be an understatement, because in moments like this, when we, the human, when our identity is shaken, when our work is uncertain, when life is uncertain and it feels unfamiliar, relying on yourself doesn't work anymore in the same way. You can try. So you have to believe in something bigger. If that's not a god or gods or whatever, if you don't have faith in that, then maybe you can have faith, I hope, in a collective goodness, in a consciousness that we all have that's gonna help us get through the biggest of problems, because we've got the biggest of problems, peeps. Like we are in, this isn't about any one business or industry. You know, we got big stuff here that is more complicated and is going to take us all collectively to work through that. So if you can't have hope and faith in that, then finding confidence potentially in a mission statement or even in your personal mission is going to be more difficult. Like, it's got to be more. And the tool I was talking about that I wanted to give to people is, you know, there are a number of great tools out there, one of which that is predominantly focused oftentimes towards women, but I think it could work for anyone, is by Elena Brower, who is an incredible yoga teacher and guru, and just an amazing person that helps people focus. So some of her books and things are called Practice You, which helps people kind of ground themselves in, you know, who are you? Who do you want to be? And has actual exercises around that. Of course, we have that at Aria Consulting too, oftentimes that are very leadership focused. So of course, if that doesn't resonate, I was just giving another option for people who aren't necessarily corporate or maybe need something that's bigger. Of course, there's a ton of resources. Nick, you have some like Rise Above. And I'm sure the two of you have a lot of other resources, whether they're faith-based or not. You know, there's a lot out there. But the last thing I just want to say that also came out of what you were saying, Rob, that's important. Like, we can't look back. We have to look forward. And we call this creating the future. So the two of you have probably heard me say that before. Anybody out there who knows me and works with me or my team have probably heard us say it ad nauseum. But the only way to get through complex issues and problems, whatever that is to actually focus forward, not backwards, to, in whatever way possible, bring your creativity, because creativity and creative energy helps us, well, it feels good because it's fresh and it is an open conversation for something new to happen. If we just keep looking backwards, and I was saying to a team yesterday, like, we have to stop thinking that the old world's coming back. It's not. So let's create together the future, bringing with us what we can from before. Like, I know you're attached to some stuff, behaviorally, belief system, whatever that is. Like, okay, like, it's just like you moving to a new house, Nick. The best way to move, I've moved a lot. My dad was a Marine. I think my parents have moved 23 times or some crazy number.
Wow, are you serious? That's a lot.
We could ask my mom on another day. We could have my mom on here, Nick.
Get her on camo as well.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, my point is, that's what has to happen here. Like, we got to all move. We all have to move forward. We got to decide what we're taking, but we also need to know that on the other side, because it's unfamiliar, that it's going to potentially take some grounding with creativity to get us unstuck and to get us moved with some hope. Maybe that'll feel better to the humans.
Right. I mean, I love that saying that you always teach us in our team, you know, don't get stuck in the yuck, and no one likes the yuck. And the fear is that we're never going to get out of this yuck. And those who don't have a purpose or mission or a greater faith, my belief system and faith in Christianity has helped me to really overcome the fact that I have no arms and no legs, has helped me to really look for and believe in that greater purpose and greater mission. And it forces you to go back to the roots of roots within your soul. I mean, the reason why me and my wife love sharing with our children the ability to write a letter to impoverished children around the world who wouldn't have food without our monthly support is because my parents taught me, don't forget the poor people, because they were once poor. And for the greater good, the social unrest, there are many issues in the world, and we know that together we can make the world a better place. And building something into the future without getting stuck in the yuck, or even hanging your hat on, I'm going to be vocal and I'm going to share with everyone what I feel and say, and a lot of noise is going on, and then which is great to express what you believe and what you feel. We all need to do that as human beings, but collectively in our team, in our family, in our community, that we all affect and give a ripple out there in the world of either negativity or positivity to make the world a better place. Building a future for the next 10, 20 years for the company, for your life, I've found that it may not really look like much like you've ever seen before. And I love, Rob, in our prep call, just the reference of, you know, whatever we build, you know, build in the future without building upon nothing else but a brand new piece of land in a heart, if you will. And I'm rephrasing what you've said in our prep call, but really we don't build our future based on the past as much as this is where we're at. We're not, you know, solely living in the future. We're not forgetting the past, but here and now, let's clear the ground together as much as we can to now put a new foundation in that we know will be sustainable, scalable, and fulfilling. I love that. If it ain't fulfilling, you ain't happy. And if you ain't happy, you can have everything accomplished and still not get what actually makes you come alive. And I feel that is the part of life that we miss. We wake up and we're like, wow, why did I live so many years unfulfilled? And part of that for me, I love fishing, Rob. I didn't tell you this, but I love fishing. I put my little toe in there. And I love driving the boat, towing my children on the back on the tube, water sports. I grew up on the water. We fished nearly every day before I moved as a 23-year-old from Australia because we lived on the water. Those things, what's really cool, Chris, I've been talking to you as my coach. You know, it's almost like, my purpose, my mission has never changed, but I'm not a 19-year-old ready to run and every third day on a plane, clocking 2,500 plane rides. They say I run so fast I leave my legs behind. Now I am married for 8 years, 4 children. What a breath of fresh air and to me, an opportunity. It's an opportunity. It's almost like a second chance that I can say, okay, now that I'm a father of four, now that I know what I know, and we don't know what we don't know, there'll always be unknowns, but that fact is always going to be there in life. Mm-hmm. And so not living in the past, not only living in the future, but currently being fulfilled and making sure that what you do short-term and mid-term helps you to actually be happy also on the long-term. And knowing that in every season, like look how many startups you've done, Rob, you know what it means to start a company. You know what it means to sell a company, have an exit. That's a lot of work and you anticipate it, but you don't really know it till you've gone through it. So now with the experience you've had and building on that for your future, what would be the last tips that you could give our leaders listening or watching right now, knowing that there are people all over the world listening to us, but however you feel to land the plane here, you know, as a coxswain, as our leaders of companies saying, keep rowing, even though you see one of the team members fly off and you're holding steady, what are some last tips that you would like to leave us with?
You know, I'm so desperate to end in hope, and I am incredibly hopeful on so many levels. I see some really fundamental things changing all around us that will be better. There will be some industries, people, and things that are forever disrupted, but the opportunity for us to be less separate as a people, the opportunity for us to evolve, create some new industries, excited to see a positive impact on the climate by this change. I mean, there is a tremendous amount of hope and positivity that I would like to leave with. But I think the one thing that for me, I feel compelled to say is that, you know, the Navy SEALs say the only easy day was yesterday. And they say that when you think about it, yesterday was really hard for them. It was, you know, really, really hard. But I think it's to prepare us for what's ahead, right? Maybe the only easy day for a while was yesterday. And I think as leaders, we have to sort of show up understanding that there's no promise that things are going to be error-free. There's no promise the guy in front of you isn't going to get jerked out of the boat or that this is going to last a week, a month, 2 months. That's That's not our job. We don't get that commitment. We have to keep our team together, keep as many people in the boat as we can, try to stay on mission. If it's wrong, correct it. Look at your mission statements again and your vision statements. Do they still reflect you? Do they still reflect the organization? Are they relevant? But once everybody says, yep, have more voices in the room than maybe when you first built it in your garage, like I did so many years ago, but make it now something everybody can stack hands on again, that you can carry this forward for the next bit of time. But there's no commitment that yesterday wasn't your easiest day for quite some time. And I think if we go into that with that expectation, maybe we'll be better prepared. Maybe we will be grittier, use your term, Chris, of maybe we'll understand the requirement to be resilient. That would be my again, I've got a lot of people I care a lot about who are Navy SEALs. And, you know, that statement has always resonated with me in a way that I feel like we're living right now.
Love it. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and experience. It's an honor to get to know you, Rob Crozier. Helion Inc., what's the perspective right now? What are you guys looking forward? Like, how do you even plan ahead from a personal corporate point of view? Do you have a 3-year plan? Do you have a 3-month plan? I'm just so curious, like, how are you guys actually operating on the forefront at the executive team?
Well, let me share something that maybe the past hour doesn't illuminate. A big part of our business was providing live people to go into facilities. Every single one of those doors is locked. That building went to zero. That business went to zero in revenue. Now we have other things we're doing. We tacked, but I know, Chris, there are businesses out there who are struggling trying to understand what is next. Everything that I've suggested to you, all of the energy that I'm bringing is in the context of a business that went to zero in revenue in March. Now, again, there are other things and other businesses that we're involved in, but I still have tremendous hope that we now moved tact quickly to try to understand how we provide some of that support virtually. And frankly, I think that new business that was born out of necessity, out of the need to tack into the wind, will probably be larger, more successful someday than had we stayed on the same line we were on and just delivered live support. So, right, what is the statement? Serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So we're trying to live in courage, changing the things we can, not mourning. I could still be really angry and stomping my feet, but that doesn't help employees, it doesn't help customers, it doesn't help humanity if we stop rowing.
Love it. Keep rowing. Tack into the wind. What a powerful, powerful episode this has been, Chris. Oh my gosh, like, this has been an awesome time together. And I want to say to you, thank you for helping so many leaders out there across corporate America and globally to be the coxswain they need to be, because the decisions that the CEOs make does trickle down to the families, to the well-beings of society. It's one of the privileges, yet the burdens and responsibilities that you have to help leaders all around the world tack into the wind. So on this episode of Keep Rowing, Chris, is there anything else that you want to leave our listeners with?
Nope. I just want to say to everybody, these are the awesome people I get to hang out with. And I'm thrilled that, Nick, you're hosting this so that we can let more people in, right? So thanks.
Love it. Love it. One more question for you, Rob. Oh, sorry. Yep. Yeah. I wanted to ask Rob, what's your favorite book and why?
I would say that, lately, I'm spending a lot of my time in a very old book because, you know, I'm finding a great deal of comfort and grounding in what it means for me to be a servant leader. So that would be my answer. There's lots of other, you know, business books that, you know, have excited me, but I will tell you that, you know, I get a lot more out of listening to people who are doing the hard work in terms of leadership lessons than I do sometimes people who are standing on stage talking about leadership. So I would just say that I do a lot of listening to people who are not only who work for us, but who are out there doing the hard work, the heavy lifting. And I think, you know, right now it's a time for leaders to be reaching out, listening more than being inward and reading. That would be maybe another little recommendation, is to get out of your library with all the books, with somebody talking to you about stuff, and talk to people, and listen to people. And, you know, one of the leaders that I care a lot about and work with often said, it's time to listen, learn, and love. And I thought those three words together, and maybe in that order, are kind of what the season I'm in right now.
Love that. Chris, is there a book that you're rereading in, because you're going through a massive reboot yourself? Is there something that you ground yourself with as far as a leadership book or something like that? What do you got?
So I have Man's Search for Meaning. I don't know if you realize this, Nick, but I said this back in an episode we did with a leader, someone you know, Rob, Sean Lippman. Mm-hmm. I had about 3 days. I don't believe in accidents. I had 3 days where in numerous conversations, completely unprompted, this book kept coming up. This book, Man's Search for Meaning by Dr. Viktor Frankl, is something that my dad gave me a long time ago. It's the foundation of a few programs we use. But what's interesting is I took it for granted and hadn't really thought about it. And then all of a sudden, during this time, it just started coming up in conversations. To my point, in the episode we did with Sean Lippman, he just brought it up randomly, and I was thinking, okay, this is not random and it's not a coincidence. So I got on Amazon immediately, bought I think 20 of these, and not only reread it myself, but anybody who I feel like, for whatever reason, they just need it, this is what they're getting. So spoiled the surprise to people who might get a book from me. But yeah, so I would highly recommend it. Man's Search for Meaning, Dr. Viktor Frankl. You can get it on Amazon or any place you buy books.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm actually I ask you guys these questions because books and getting out of your own library is so healthy. Like, I think I'm reading the same old book as you, Rob, the spiritual book, the old book. That'll never change. But there was one book that I read long time ago, The Richest Man That Lived in Babylon. And it just a little book that is just full of, it's almost like a book of Proverbs and just a lot of wisdom at this time to ground you. And I encourage all your listeners or people watching, take time to read a book or listen to something. Like, I'm glad that you're listening to this podcast. Don't stop listening to this one, but open up your horizon and read maybe something you haven't read, or think of a book that has grounded you in the past that you might want to go back to, because subconsciously and consciously, it's a good reaffirm exercise for you to get grounded as well. We love you, no matter who you are, where you're from. We are so thankful that you've tuned in for the Leadership Now episode here with Rob Crozier. Rob, thanks again so much. And mate, so great to get to know you and be able to share you with the world. Chris, thank you so much for sharing Rob with all of us.
I'm humbled, guys. It's been an amazing experience. I'm a big fan of both of you.
Love you, Rob. Chris, love you.
Love you.
All right, to all our listeners, make sure that you tune in to next week's episode on Leadership Now.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening. Help us reach as many people as possible by giving us a rating, a review, and subscribing to this podcast. Love you so much. And remember, share this with anyone you know who needs to hear this as well. I'll see you next week.